Maybe I need to reevaluate my relationship with tech and like get more nature and friendships in the real world.
I don't know if you've known this. I just found out about this. Did you know there's a lockdown mode on your Mac, iPhone, and iPad?
No, what is that?
Welcome back to the Digital Dive Podcast, a conversation about tech. My name is Darsh. I am one of your hosts.
My name is Jacqueline. I'm your other host. We're going to be talking about three things that we think are going to happen in tech this year.
If you like what you hear this episode, guys, make sure to hit that follow button on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts and make sure that you get notified of every episode that we do. And it ultimately helps us get the show out to even more people. Thank you. We really appreciate it. And without any further ado, let's roll the intro.
Okay. Thing number one. Foldables, Darsh. So before this episode, Darsh and I basically went through a deep dive of trying to find all the different trends and topics that a lot of people are not only discussing a lot, but then what consumers seem to be interested in. And we've narrowed it down to three main areas of the tech field that we think are going to be prominent and big. And we're going to touch on all of them. But I think the first one that we should touch on is foldables, because Samsung just came out with the invite for Unpacked in San Francisco. I think that's just going to be a regular S-line film probably, but we're going to be expecting more foldables from them either at that event or later in the year. And so one of Darsh's top picks for this year that I agree with was foldables, and I would love to know why.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that foldables are going to be a huge trend this year, but funny enough, I don't think they're going to be a huge trend in the Western Hemisphere. So what I was more so thinking about was, so the Galaxy Z Fold and the Z Flip are huge in Asia, right? They have a huge market share there, and they have this, like, I guess, set precedent that they are a very, very, for a lack of a better word, proper phone to have. Like, it's less of a worry, I guess, over there than it is here about, like, its longevity and its abilities.
Is there data that it's used more in Asia?
No data that it's used more in Asia, but it seems as though the US market for foldables is a lot smaller than that in Asia, than that of the foldable market in Asia and Europe.
Interesting. Why do you, like, what, I would love to know the reasoning. Like, why do you think?
Honestly,
where are you making this assumption from?
Oh, okay. So I was reading a Digital Trends article, and it was pretty much discussing how the foldable landscape is really interesting because there are a lot of regional exclusives that are coming out with foldable devices, and the Z Flip and the Z Fold are some of the only foldable phones that are actually offered in North America. For the most part, all these other foldable devices, like the ones from Huawei and other brands similar to, are only being released in Asia and in Europe. They're not being released here at all. Like the Oppo Find N, the Vivo X Fold, Xiaomi Mix Fold. Like these are all foldables that are only available outside the US, and it seems like they're not really getting into the US market. And so I don't know if 2023 is going to be the year that we see them more visibly in the North American market, but I think that it's definitely going to be an uptick in how many of these phones tend to come out on the other side of the world. And I think the impact there is going to be huge onto what we see here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I wasn't thinking about it like that, but you're right. There are so many more brands that are doing foldable tech in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now, Samsung has such a big competitive advantage in the American market because of that, because there aren't a lot of manufacturers. The only real one that comes to mind for me is Motorola. Who do you think would be the next company that would come into the American market?
Honestly, I think the next one to come in is probably going to be either Oppo or Xiaomi. I think Xiaomi has become a bit of a conglomerate to a point where they're going to be able to kind of expand into the US and like put in that marketing effort. But the big issue with launching phones in the US right now is that Apple, Samsung, and Google have an oligopoly on the space where most people, if they're going out to buy a new phone, are going to either buy an iPhone, a Samsung phone, or they're going to buy the Pixel. There's not really much other competition in the space, and they pretty much run and dominate it. Samsung has all these different phones for different price ranges. Google has a couple as well, and then Apple is just Apple. The iPhone is one of the most popular phones in the US. So naturally, it's kind of disadvantageous for these companies to try to move overseas to this Western Hemisphere because they aren't going to actually see as big of a return out of it. Whereas over on the Eastern side, they're more able to do so.
Okay, you know what's so funny, Darsh? One of my best friends always like jokes around that I say the word optimize a lot. Like I'm constantly like, ooh, we should optimize for this, or what do you optimize for in X thing? And I feel like you say the word oligopoly a lot too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's the one thing out of my degree that I get to flex as much as I can. Like, yo, I hate my econ.
Yeah, it makes you sound smart immediately.
Well, yeah, I hated my econ degree, but you know what? If there's one thing I got out of it, and this is something I've known since high school too, I didn't even learn this through my degree, it's oligopolies, all right? I have a love and a passion for oligopolies because they're not like monopolies. No, monopolies are basic. Oligopoly. Monopoly has a board game. There's no board game called oligopoly.
Oligopoly.
Right?
No, you got to be like level 10 intelligence to know what it means.
Exactly. I feel really cool that like, you know, have these like
secret
Honestly,
words. Though, it does make you sound smart immediately. So that tracks.
The entire purpose of this podcast is to make you and I sound smart.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of failing, or at least I feel like you're killing it.
No, you're not failing. You definitely bring a lot of insight into this podcast, and I want to hear more about your insight into foldables. As someone who's actually, I feel like you've actually used like every generation of the Fold and the Flip devices from Samsung, and I feel like you'd actually have a better idea of like what we'd be looking to see this year. Like what kind of improvements do you want to be made for these lines of devices? Like whether or not they're actually going to be a viable option for the most generic of consumers. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, first of all, thank you. Second of all, I think that this year was a big year for foldables in becoming like, if you didn't like it, you probably aren't going to be convinced by this year. But if you wanted one, it's an easier sell than ever. And I think that for 2023, it's probably going to be similar because we still have certain technological limitations. Like with a crease, even if they make it a little bit better, it's still going to be there a little bit. With how heavy it is, with the pricing, even if it gets brought down a little bit, it's still going to be on average more expensive than a premium flagship. And so I think that the updates we're going to see are iterative, which is honestly like broad scale what we're seeing with a lot of smartphones, iterative updates. And I think that in life, there's like two ways to always look at things, like the optimist lens or like the pessimist lens. And I think like a lot of people are like, oh, like smartphones aren't innovating enough, like they're boring now, et cetera. But like I am an optimist at heart. And so I think that the innovations that we're going to see are actually going to be like life improvement innovations, even if they're iterative. Like if they just make two things better, the phone was already great. So it's going to be an even better phone. I think that they can make those like two improvements or few improvements in software, like computational photography, optimization of like multitasking and stuff. And then if they could make the phone any lighter, I feel like that would definitely be a big selling point.
Honestly, that's fair. So I've actually been able to use the Galaxy Fold over the past couple of weeks, the Z Fold 4, and I've been really enjoying it. Like, honestly, it's one of the only things that makes me want to go back to Android. Like, I would actually use the Fold every single day if there wasn't the stigma behind the green bubble. Like, if I knew that my friends wouldn't flame me for having a green bubble, or my parents wouldn't be really, really ticked off by me leaving the iMessage group chat,
yeah,
I would probably do it. But the other reason I don't is because of those reasons, which is why Apple has a hold on my heart. But that aside, I think that you did touch on a really good point there, where I think a lot of software updates over the next year or so are going to be really, really crucial towards adding, I guess, better life features, like things that you won't really know that you need until you feel like you need it. Like, I don't know if you've known this. I just found out about this. Did you know there's a lockdown mode on your Mac, iPhone, and iPad?
No, what is that?
So it pretty much limits communication like externally and internally so that if there is someone trying to execute a high-level cyber attack on any of your devices, Apple tries to mitigate all that risk by like not allowing access to photos, not allowing access to the internet, not allowing access to your messages, like all these different things, so that people, if you feel like you're about to be hacked, you can prevent that, which is really interesting in terms of cybersecurity.
That's really cool, actually. That is a sick feature.
No, exactly. And that kind of leads me into the next trend that I want to talk about for this year, and that's artificial intelligence, because I feel like when it comes to security and cybersecurity, artificial intelligence is always at the forefront of that conversation, because everyone's really worried about the Terminator coming back, and you know, like, it's the Terminator. It's scary, man. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about AI a lot. Like, we've talked about ChatGPT. We've talked about the Google AI event. We did like a whole episode breaking down both ChatGPT actually, and then all the Google innovations that were happening in the AI space. There's going to be a lot this year. Microsoft just announced that they're going to put ChatGPT into like Bing, which means like maybe we're going to see a Bing renaissance possibly. Google is working on tons of different stuff with AI. They're being a lot more cautious in launching it because they're like such a conglomerate. Like, they have to really be mindful because their technology is going to affect like billions of people. But I just saw ChatGPT 4.0, like how much data they were using for it, and it's astronomically larger than 3.0. And so I think my prediction for this year is that we're going to see a lot of new innovation in AI, in it getting better and more factual, but we will still see the issues of like it's saying something that sounds right but isn't, it not being able to answer certain queries. And then also we're going to, I think, see a huge discussion around what jobs can and cannot be replaced and what skills can and cannot be replaced by ChatGPT. And my like just personal take on it is that I don't think it's going to replace the artist because there is like this intangible human touch. But I think what's going to become a lot more important is emotional vulnerability in like videos, art, podcasts, etc., and emotional authenticity, because the software AI can replicate like human it can like imitate a human, but since it doesn't have the emotions, I feel like that's going to be the unique differentiator. And the way that like no one's going to write a Taylor Swift song because like she knows how to do it, or like Drake, right? Like they talk about their own personal experience. So I think that emotional authenticity is going to become like the differentiator for arts as the AI excels. But I think it's going to definitely excel, and that conversation is going to become like very vast.
I think that's actually really interesting that you bring up Drake and Taylor Swift, because it's funny because you hit it right on the nail there. Like they pull from real life experience, and I don't mean to sound rude to any AIs listening, but what kind of real life experience do you have? Like seriously, you were coded in some guy's basement. Like seriously.
They have the experience of the world, right? Because they get like all the data in aggregate. So they have like my experience, your experience, like whoever puts their data in, they have like thousands of people's experiences. And like since human emotions are universal in a way, like then they could figure out how to imitate it. But also I think specificity is what creates connection. So like when Drake or Taylor Swift or someone talks about like a breakup that they've been in like grueling detail, even though like the details don't actually relate to like a situation that I've been in or you've been in, like it feels real. So then the feeling relates versus like a pop song where they try to keep it general so it's universally relatable. Those songs actually feel, I think, less relatable because there's no like specificity to like add realism. And so I think that that's kind of where AI is going to not be able to compete.
Yeah, I think AI has a lot of area to improve in this space, but I think there's also a lot of really cool things that are coming out of it. I saw this app on TikTok the other day, and I actually downloaded it, did the 3-day free trial, and deleted it. But the reason I downloaded it was because what it was doing was looking at pictures that were blurry or that were a bit grainy and then smoothing everything out. Now, it did look a bit like a beauty filter when it worked, but it like actually did a really good job. Like I was using pictures that I'd taken like outside during Christmas, like going to see lights and stuff like that with different friends. And I was just having this filter pretty much go across where it like fully smoothed out and made everything look more realistic. But then on another lens, it also made things look a little creepy because it's kind of like, this is how artificial intelligence interprets human facial structures. And so a lot of the different things that they were doing to compensate for the loss of quality were making it look just like, I remember there was this one picture and my eye looked really weird because of the lighting. And
okay.
When I went over, I was like, yeah, so I look like I'm an alien. Like that's just, I guess, what the AI thinks I am. But it's like stuff like that, or even TikTok, like having AI like make you a meme or like your AI portrait based off a picture of you. Like they're able to turn like a picture of you into this animated portrait that looks almost identical to you, which I feel like is actually a very transferable feature into the metaverse, like into Web 3.0. Like that's something that I can see directly as transferable, which is really exciting to me.
But metaverse is exciting to you, my dude.
I think the fact that this is a possibility to like fully convert your visual appearance into a virtual form, I think that's really, really interesting and intriguing.
Okay. I can see that, which honestly, like that brings us into this third idea, the third trend of the year, which is my take that, or my hopeful take. I don't like, this is not 100% like rooted, like I think for sure it's going to happen, but this is what I'm hoping it's going to happen. I hope that people are going to, and I think people are developing a more mindful relationship with tech, because I think that 2020, like with lockdown, was the year of overconsumption. 2021, also the year of overconsumption, where we had TikTok, short form content, tons of text, animations, hours of scrolling, feeling like toxic content about like gym culture or hustle culture or people like going out all the time, or like just feeling like you're not doing enough in any category. And then also everyone being on their phone for hours, Zoom meetings, like Zoom fatigue, social media doom scrolling, like all the stuff with Twitter, like news reports, etc. Like I just feel like the last 2 years have been such a time of like getting so much thrown at us in terms of media and dopamine and stuff. And I think that 2022 was the start of people being like, like maybe I need to reevaluate my relationship with tech and like get more nature and friendships in the real world. And so I think for 2023, one of my predictions is that we're going to see mindfulness come back, where people are more intentional. Like anecdotally, I just got dinner last night with one of my best friends, and she was saying that she turned off Instagram notifications. And I also did that in the last like 6 months, and it really changed my relationship with the app, in where I feel like less like, oh, like I need to open it. Or like when I post a photo, like let me get the dopamine of who's liking and who's not, or like whatever. And so I think that we're going to see people like be more intentional with how much they use their phone and technology as a whole. And then on the flip side of that, what Darsh is saying right now about the metaverse, I think we're going to see a lot more pulls to spend more of our lives digitally. And I'm really hoping that we only use metaverse and digital technology for small things that like benefit our lives versus like having like creating a second world.
Yeah. Actually, the fact that you mentioned like turning off your notifications, I did that a couple of years ago with Instagram likes and comments, where I'd only leave comments on so that if someone commented on something, I could respond. But otherwise, like likes I turned off, stories, like story responses I turned off, like just like small things here.
Oh,
and there.
Really?
Yeah. Like I turned off a lot of notifications from Instagram, and now I'm actually like, you've made me kind of think a little bit more. I do want to just turn them off altogether. I think that notifications on apps, for me at least, I have a big thing of like, I want to keep all my apps constantly like clear of notifications. I want to make sure that I have everything up to date and everyone is informed of what's going on. Like I can always keep in touch with people. But I think that that also creates this really toxic loop where you're constantly looking at all these different pieces of content.
Yeah.
And constantly like giving yourself that dopamine rush. And it's not great.
Totally.
Like I've been in a huge mindfulness kick this past couple of weeks, just trying to like, you know, sort myself out, make 2023 the best year it can be. And I think that social media definitely has and does play into all of that, especially with AR and VR becoming more of a real thing. Like we talked about this during like our top tech from 2022 video, like the Meta Quest Pro. I think it's an amazing device, but it's also like really blurring the lines between virtual reality and like an actual reality. And I think that there's more that we can get out of life if we kind of put down our phones, but then also there's a lot we're losing from putting down our phones. So it's this really interesting kind of tug of war dynamic that we have with technology and like ourselves at this point.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree. I think there's this idea that I think Andrew Huberman talks about a lot, which is like earned dopamine, which is like there are certain things in our life that give us dopamine, but it's not earned dopamine. So for example, like scrolling on social media, and then you kind of feel like almost like shitty afterwards because it almost feels like it feels like it like melts your brain. Like after, or at least anecdotally for me, once I like scroll for like an hour, I can't focus on like anything in a meaningful way. Versus like the dopamine from like a good workout or a good conversation is like so much more fulfilling, and I'm able to like utilize it then to like focus. Or like the dopamine from like working hard, honestly, is like much more like if I'm like in the flow state with a video. And so I feel like a lot of people are noticing that because I feel like a lot of us went through like the overconsumption stage. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. I agree. I definitely turning off notifications. Like I still have likes and comments on for like, because it's like work, but I don't have notifications on for it. So like, I only see it when I open the app.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It's definitely helped a lot. Like I also used to definitely be like you where I was like, I need notifications on for everything. Cause like, I want to constantly be available to all the people. But I ended up getting so drained by that because I felt like I was constantly getting texts and emails and Instagram messages, and I felt like I had to respond to them in the moment. Like once I knew that someone wrote me, I like couldn't not respond, like because I would want to talk to them. And so turning off the notifications really helped me because then it like the, I guess like trigger of the behavior of like, oh, see text, respond was eliminated. So I think we're going to see, I don't know, an overall move shift to like healthier relationship with tech, because also companies are like announcing screen time limits and focus modes and like all these things. I just feel like we're moving towards that direction.
Yo, I have to say, since I started work, focus modes have become my favorite thing on earth. Like,
ooh, okay, wait, tell me how you have them set up. What are your different ones?
So I have one for the gym. It's called personal. It's for more for me time. So anytime I want to just like be on my own and just kind of enjoy like some alone time, I'll turn on personal. And so that restricts all notifications. I get nothing. And it turns off two of my screens. The only thing I have access to is like my email, my work channel, and like my docs, like Spotify, Twitter, phone messages, like that kind of thing. But none of the notifications come through and no badges come through. So I don't see any of that. So I feel as if like my life is just serene. Then I have so I do that for the gym and whenever I just want some alone time, but I also have a work one where it only keeps two pages open. So I have one page for financials and I have one page for like work stuff. And then I have another page for all my social media.
Smart.
So I only leave financials and work available to me, and I turn off all notifications for everything aside from favorites, so that if like my family needs to get in touch with me while I'm working, or like Slack, I have Slack on, my emails on, my calendar's on, and then that's pretty much it. So it's very much like just for work. When I need to work, I can sit down and just grind. And then I'm one of my favorites, then I'll get a message. And every now and again, I will go check like my focus status and see like, okay, like how many people have messaged me or like what kind of notification I'm looking at. But it's definitely something I really like this week, I have to say.
Ooh, I also really like it this week. And I feel like that transitions us perfectly into stuff we like this week. The second stuff we like this week ever, because now we're in season 3.
Yeah,
so season 3, episode 2. Feels big. And so, okay, that's your first one, Darsh. So I guess I'll give my first one. Stuff we like this week is a part of the show where we talk about things, music, movies, pop culture stuff that we're enjoying this week. And my first one is, I feel like it's going to surprise no one, Taylor Swift's song. It's called Hits Different. It's a exclusive like that she just released on vinyl, but then someone uploaded it to Spotify, I think, or maybe YouTube. And I heard it and it was really good.
Really? Okay, interesting. I feel like that wasn't a surprise at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no one's surprised. I feel like if you've listened to any episode, I like talk about Taylor Swift at least once.
At least once, but that's okay. At least once is okay. That's fair.
That's my first one. What about you? What's your second one?
My second one's actually I don't know if you've heard of this on Netflix, Kaleidoscope.
Ooh, no, I haven't, but that word is like very satisfying.
So Kaleidoscope is a TV show on Netflix. It's based on a heist, but what's interesting about it is that there is no set order for the show and every single Netflix account gets a different order, but because you can watch it in any order that you want and it'll all make sense. So if you go on like Netflix's Twitter.
That's so cool.
And you check out like Kaleidoscope, there's a Kaleidoscope tweet and it's literally every single actor in the show itself and what they believe you should watch it in if you want a certain style. So like there's a Tarantino style, there's a detective style, there's a this style. There's just some of them being like, this is just how I watched it. This is how I think it should go. Like those kinds of like different mix and matches. So I just fully went about doing it my own way and I loved it. I thought it was a phenomenal show. Highly recommend it. It was great. I wish it wasn't a limited release, but it's a limited release. But it did, like, it was phenomenal. I really, like, I didn't watch Wednesday. I didn't watch any of the recent shows that have been, like, hyped up by everyone. This is the one show I've seen, and I'm like, yo, I love this.
Ooh, I really want to watch it. Dude, I feel like you would be, like, a fun person to, like, watch a movie with.
Oh, I commentate way too much when I watch a movie. It's really
bad. Also commentate. I actually love watching movies with people that commentate. I feel like it makes the movie more fun.
It does, unless I'm watching it for the first time. If I'm watching it for the first time, then I don't speak. I just want to absorb everything, but if I'm watching it for the second time, I will comment on everything.
Yeah, I like that.
Not in a theater. Like if I'm watching it for the first time, I don't care much about the movie, then I'll commentate through and throughout. But if I really care about the movie and I'm watching it outside of a theater, then I will focus on it fully. Or if I'm in the theater, I will focus on it fully. But if I'm outside of a theater and I'm watching it, then I'll more likely talk.
Yeah, I feel like anyone that does film is kind of falls in that category.
Yeah, well, it's like this admiration for like, for one, the camera work, for two, the colors, and then for three, just like the acting and the ability to like actually portray a story like that. Like, I don't know if anyone realizes this listening, like, yo, it's really hard to actually tell stories. Like it's a talent. It's a skill. And like, it's very, very hard to find. And as a self-proclaimed Instagram stalker, cause that's literally my job at this point. I can tell you a lot of people can't tell stories.
You're like, now that I have this job, I know most people suck.
Yo, the amount of content that I've looked at that is just absolutely subpar. Like, I would feel embarrassed putting out some of this content. Like, it's brutal. Like, I'm looking at these people. I'm like, how are you trying to put some effort into this. Like, the fact that a reel of someone walking in the sand and then panning upwards, with a shaky hand, by the way, really shaky hand, pan Ooh. Upward and then show a beach and be like, POV, living my best life. And that gets 2 million views. Are you serious?
That's crazy.
I'm referencing an actual piece of content I saw today on Instagram.
It's like, no, well, I want to see it, Darsh.
I will try to find it for you and send it, but yo, that is absurd to me. And okay, pro tip, this is one thing I will say before we start heading out. What is it called? If you are trying to make content and you do not have either a tripod or a gimbal or something to stabilize your hand, what I recommend is going to your camera app, changing the frames per second to 60 or 120. So when you do that, it makes it so that every single slight shaky movement doesn't look so choppy. It looks smooth. So you can't fully differentiate between the shaky hand or just like a normal thing. And you can slow it down afterward and adjust it accordingly so that it doesn't actually look half bad. Like, I started doing that for I was helping my dad with a video that we needed to get done for his store, and I fully walked through with no gimbal, but I put it on 120 frames per second, and I walked through his store and it looked really smooth, didn't look choppy at all, and looked very, very well put together. It didn't look like there was a bunch of digital stabilization on it. So pro tip, if you guys want like non-shaky video from your phone, switch up the frames per second to 60 or 120. It will help a lot.
Interesting. That's a good pro tip. Dude, by the way, this is the last thing I'll say before we head out of this episode. Did you know the Golden Globes were tonight?
What?
Yeah, like this is the first year I feel like where I like no one talked about it, and I also had no idea it was happening.
I'll be honest, even last year I missed the Oscars. Like the only reason I knew it happened was because I saw Will Smith like smack Chris Rock on stage yeah. all over Instagram. It's the only reason I knew it happened. Like other than that, I was like, I didn't care.
Yeah, why is it like, I feel like when we were kids, it was like a big event. Like when I was a kid, I would be so stoked for all the award shows and like I would watch my family and stuff. It's so weird. I feel like they're not as big of a deal.
Until they host the Oscars on like Netflix or something, it's gonna lose. It's losing traction because they only play it on like these big television networks and no one watches them anymore. And like, I feel like that's just like a huge other topic on like the state of television as a whole. And I would actually love to break that down True. In an episode if anyone's
Dude,
interested.
Dude, we should
tweet us at Digital
Yeah, that'd
Bipod.
Be so fun.
I think that could be a great episode talking about the state of television and the future of that industry. But yeah, it's really, really weird. And I'm like, I don't know, like the Grammys, the Oscars. It just doesn't appeal to me anymore. Even the Super Bowl has less of a flair now. Like, it used to be such a big hyped up event, and I guess it still is for like diehard football fans. But people who just watch the Super Bowl year after year, like I do, like I watch it for the game, but also for the halftime show. Like, I don't really care as much anymore than as I used to.
Yeah, I still feel like Super Bowl is fun for like the plans element of like hanging out with friends or like family and stuff.
Yeah, it's like a social thing, but that's it.
That's it. And whereas when I was a kid, I used to like be obsessed with the commercials and like watching the game. It's kind of sad that like those big like milestone events aren't as big of a deal, but I wonder if it's like us growing up or if it's like not a big deal for like the entirety of society. Like, we need people that are older than us listening to this podcast right now to let us know.
Yeah, well, I think that's a huge thing too. Like, we grew up in the age where like television was shifting towards like streaming because of cord cutters, right? Like, the more cord cutters we have, the more people who are switching from like I don't even think we pay for cable anymore. I think we only have streaming platforms. Like it's at this point, like, all the ads on cable from what I've seen are about streaming platforms. Like, first ad is Disney Plus. Next one is Discovery Plus. After that, it's Netflix. After that, it's, I don't know, HBO. Like, something or another.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. And then it's all these big conglomerates as well. Like, Discovery bought out HBO a couple months ago. Or maybe it was like 6 months ago now. But they bought out HBO. So now Discovery has this giant network of content that no one really thought they'd ever have, but they do. And so it's just really interesting to see, like, how this is going.
Yeah, dude, that would be a really good episode. I feel like we got to make it. So let us know on Digital Dive Pod if you guys want to listen to it or, like, if we should make that. We'll be back the Monday after next Monday with another episode. We got to figure out a better way to say that. But I want to thank you guys all so much for listening to this episode. So excited for season 3 to be, like, consistent this year. So much fun content to come, fun interviews, conversations like this, breaking down bigger trends in tech, experiences with phones, the gamut. It really is going to run the gamut. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing year. Also want to give a huge shout out, as always, to Adil Constantine for creating the amazing intro and outro music we've been using for now 3 seasons, because it's that good. Thank you so much, Adil. It was honestly fantastic. It's been really great talking to you guys this week. It's really good to be back just recording episodes with Jacqueline again. And I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode. I think it's a good one. Let us know what you guys think at Digital Dive Pod on Twitter. And we'll catch you guys next Monday at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern.
Bye.
Bye.